ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have a local player on. His name is Brendan Lee. If you guys recognize the name, he currently plays for the Texas Outlaws. He's a coach with Alpha Forms, and he's a local collegiate player that graduated from SMU. So if you're listening to this episode this week and you want to learn about Brendan's journey into this beautiful game, it's an amazing story. And I do have to apologize. I couldn't edit out the background noise like I said I could to him. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. It was much harder. I'm sorry. It's going to be kind of a hard listen. But once you start listening, it kind of all fades away. You can hear it. You can hear the Christmas music in the background. It made me smile every time I came across it. Now, if you're ready to start this journey with me, let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Brendan Lee here, born and raised in Dallas, Texas. Soccer was not my first sport. It was I tried everything else. I was innately athletic. I was able to just kind of do things with my dad that he asked me. You know, go throw a ball, I catch. He asked me to throw it back, I could throw it back, shoot a basket, you know, kind of all those things. Once I picked up football, soccer has always been it. You know, not that I haven't deviated to other sports, but, you know, those things certainly, I think, aided to the kind of player and the way I view the game now today. But soccer has always been it since I picked up the soccer ball.
That's awesome. That soccer wasn't your main goal. So did you start off playing in rec and move to academy, or did you just make a jump into a certain level?
Yeah, so I think the scope and the spectrum of soccer has changed vastly since I've started to play, or when I started to play. It was recreational. I think that part has stayed pretty standard for across the board. The recreation is your first kind of contact with the sport. I think it's the easiest way to get in, and usually that's based on, you know, location. And I think that's why it's so easy to get in. It started out rec, had a season there. I was completely lost in the game. I mean, absolutely lost. But I remember having the night game, you know, my first night game playing rec. And I just remember the feeling being under the lights. It was really cold too, actually. And I remember being, you know, I was the kid that was wearing sweatpants under his shorts and 2-3 sweatshirts under his jersey. I was that kid. And I just remember feeling like, man, I really like this. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just really enjoyed myself. But from there, my mom actually worked at a Plano YMCA. So I played recreation in PYSA. And then I made a shift over to, I guess, what you would call academy now. I think academy and select has changed over time, but I would call it like academy, even though it was affiliated with a club. At the time it was a club called TIPS, which standed for technique, insight, I believe it was psyche and skill. Right, but it was an abbreviation. I played for TIPS, which was the academy, and that was a really great experience and jump for me, because going from rec to TIPS, everything that I focused on was based on my development as a player. So, you know, I made the jump from one season rec going into academy, and that was a huge jump for me. But a lot of that jump was not only because I wanted more from the game, but also, again, out of convenience. You know, my mom worked at the YMCA. She worked long shifts. And it was the easiest way for me outside of school to be with her without having true, I'll say, daycare. Adjacent to the Plano YMCA was soccer fields. I was an outdoors kid, so it was kind of easy for my mom to sign me up and easy to kind of shoo me away and say, hey, just go outside and go, you know, do whatever. Just don't get in any trouble. So my first coach there was a guy named Wilco Ravischer, who still coaches in the area today. Dutch background. So a lot of what I initially learned was from a Dutch perspective. Super tactical, very coordinated, super balanced. Really understanding different ways the ball is maneuvered on the ground in the air while it's bouncing. And that's kind of where I'll say my game took off. I was just there every day. I mean, there's not any sort of secret formula to it. It's just, I was there every day. Had a ball with me. Again, you call it boredom, call it, you know, whatever you want to call it. I was there, I had a ball. I trained with any teams that they would let me train with. If they were younger than me, I trained with them. If they were older than me, I trained with them. If it was my day to be there, then that was the group I trained with. So I'll say in terms of the training modality I was taking on, it was really like a kid who goes to maybe a playground or a pickup and is playing with everyone. And that's kind of the best way I can translate it. So yeah, from there I went rec to I'll say like the academy of that time. And that was kind of like my first big jump in the game.
Wilco is a, I know who Wilco is, and with now he's with Dutch FC. And that's the same Wilco, I've caught the name correctly. Great guy that I've had conversations with. Now, as you move through your, so what age was this as you're moving through this progression? So
I'll say, this was, I was a, In the grand scheme of soccer, I was pretty late, I'll say. I picked up the soccer ball probably around like 6 or 7. I know most are starting at like 3 or 4, and I know a lot of people probably have like that story of starting at 3 and 4. I started at like 6 or 7, like first time touching a soccer ball.
So as you're going through six and seven years old, picking it up late, when did you join TIPS, the academy?
Yeah, I'll say like that was like probably like 7. Like seven is when like I was in it, I was doing it like pretty heavily.
So how did it change for you as a player? Because you sound like every kid that I know that loves the game, that you just want to do it all the time and you're always with there and you would practice with anyone. I mean, that's my favorite thing to hear, is like you're willing to jump in with older kids or younger kids and it didn't matter, you just wanted to touch the ball. So did that change as you got older, as you moved into more of the select style U12 and up programs, or did it kind of just stay the same, or did you look for different opportunities to play?
So I stuck with TIPS, which eventually turned into Club Classic, which would be like the select version of TIPS. You know, I guess that would be like going from your academy, whatever the academy is called, to like the actual club itself. And I'll say the culture shock for me was like how good everyone was and how much of like a learning curve I was going to have to take on. And I went in there thinking like I didn't really have a reference of like, okay, what's really good and what's really bad. I mean, you can see kids who like kicking a ball, and like for me that was like, okay, that's kicking a ball, that's decent, you know. And then when I was introduced to TIPS, it like really started to take off around 7. Take off in terms of like the frequency and the amount of like soccer touches or training that I was taking on, and then kids that was around who were doing that at a much higher level than I was. It was again just the level of skill. Like I remember thinking, this is unreal how some of these guys are doing it, and especially the older guys, like guys that were my age, they were doing great things. The younger ones, you know, as a kid you're kind of like, you know, I think the perspective is like, okay, they're younger than me, they maybe don't have right what I could do or, you know, what I can do. But I remember watching some of the older kids being like, oh my gosh, like being like mesmerized and looking at these kids and being like, I want to be just like that. When I get older, I hope kids look at me just like that. And always having that almost like the carrot out in front of me, like right. Just always that thing to chase. And I remember, and yeah, I tell Wilco this all the time, actually, when I do get to cross passes, because I still do. And Wilco was super skillful guy. I mean, like this guy would come into trainings with us, with the older groups or with some of us, and scrimmage with us. And this guy was even more amazing than anything that I'd ever seen. I mean, this guy, I don't think he ever lost the ball when I played with him. As a kid, he would do, I mean, just like spin you around upside down, like tie you in a knot. I mean, like, I remember sometimes I'd be in the scrimmage watching and being like, just watching and like being frozen, because what I was seeing was like, it wasn't real. And then even just like outside of training, when you're juggling and things like that, doing tricks and all of this, I mean, there's so much of my, like some of the skills or some of the like tricks or things that, yeah, I don't do as much of them now. I'm a little bit older. I don't need to, but you know, if I'm around the kids, I'll pull something out. But a lot of that is 100% his influence. I mean, things he was doing with the ball, the amount of control he had, what he would present to us. It was like when I was a kid. I mean, it was like looking at a superhero. It felt like he had special powers or something. So I remember just thinking like, I want to be that as I continue to get older. Like I want to be at that kind of level, not just the skills part, but just being able to demonstrate and apply some of the things that we're learning, and then even break out of the box of, you know, this is ABCD. Okay, well, what about when E or F happens, or like, you know, something completely random happens? Like, what do you do out of all of that? And I remember just always wanting to be that. And even to this day, I'm still the same way. I'll see players that I'll play with or play against. I play professional indoor now, so the level is extremely high. And I'll see players and colleagues, and I'm like, man, I like not aspire to be, because I'm at a point in my career now where I'm like, I just try to learn as much as I can from everyone, but I still have that drive as much as I was a kid at seven trying to learn everything at almost 30, 29, so just on the cusp. I'm still the same kind of drive. Like, I'll look at anyone. I'll look at a little kid. I'll look at a competitive player, you know, anywhere, you know, between 10 and 15, 16, 17, 18, to, you know, coming out of college to in college to, you know, older than me. I'll look anywhere for inspiration, hoping to learn something and just keeping an open mind as far as, you know, what the game can teach me and what I can learn from it. And that's really the perspective that I've always taken from any environment that I've been in soccer-wise, is like what I can learn and how can I get better and what can I make like my own, right?
Right.
So I'll say that's always been, again, to this day, talking with you now where I'm at currently as a player, as a coach, like that carrot's out in front of me and I just have a real eager to learn, again, from anywhere I can find inspiration.
So how long, how do I phrase this? When you were going through this process, I mean, from the sounds of it, you had some really great influences to actually foster that process of never-ending learning and wanting to learn from your environment. Where did you learn, or when did you go from the club that you're at to the next level? Because I feel like sometimes I always tell people that ask my opinion on a coach, I go, either outgrow your coach or your coach outgrows you. You just have to find the coach where you're at. As you go through your soccer journey, like, as you've gone through your soccer journey, where did you learn to go to the next step? I mean, but how did you go from this 12, 13 year old kid with this 7 to 12, I'd say, year old kid with this absolute love for this game, didn't matter where you played, to more honing in your skill set, to being closer to the player that when you entered into the college level? Because I feel like college fine tunes you even more as an athlete,
yeah,
as a player. So
absolutely, I'll say that pathway happened pretty organically as well. So I was with Club Classic from the time I got in at like seven and got out. I'll say get out, but I'll explain here in a second more in detail. Maybe around 10, 11. And I'd say organically because the team I was on, I played and trained at a high level all the time, where the team that I played on that maybe would be, if you were looking at it prospectively today, like a really good player, probably it parallels or is, you could assume that they play your higher level soccer, like affiliated with like an ECNL or MLS Next kind of level for, I'll say, the kind of player that I believe I was. And that was my belief, right? Maybe outside perspective would call it different, but my belief was I was there because that was just my mentality. But I stayed with Club Classic. I played Plano, like PPIL, every year except for that last year. We had actually squeezed into Classic League, played Division III Classic League, and then from there my team just disbanded totally. I mean, it was a weird situation as a kid. You know, I don't really know what happened as far as maybe some of the internal dialogue that happens being on the other side of it now as a coach. You kind of hear and understand why things happen. I never really understood why that happened or how it happened, but you know, after having some of the coaches that I had at Club Classic, that, you know, I stayed at Club Classic because of the coaching staff, because of the environment. You know, I had wonderful coaches there. A coach and mentor who is a great friend now, Armando Velez, who runs, you know, American Academy of Soccer. This guy has been, I'll say, my father of soccer, and has been a huge, huge piece of my game. Another coach who doesn't coach anymore, his name's Austin Wendelkins, really focused and developed and honed in on the skills, what I think everyone knows as skills. I see it more as coordination today, kind of how you coordinate your body and do some of these different movements. And then even a step further, skills was also like learning these different movements, but also the application. So when I learned it, I always thought about the application of how it worked. But at Austin Wendelkin, in addition to, you know, Wilco. And then there was also like some really great coaches on the girls' side of that. which is formerly known as Texas Spirit. I had, you know, great coaches on that side because my sister also played soccer too, who's 4 years younger than I am. Played with Texas Spirit, again, same situation. Mom is working at Plano Y. My sister and I are just here. You know, the thing that we're going to do, the thing we fell in love with was soccer. I mean, we did everything else, right? Same as any other kid would. But soccer was like the thing that we attached to. So my sister played for Texas Spirit. Coaches like Quinn Willis, who's at, I believe, Surf now. Huge inspiration, great family friend to my game. You know, so there was a great eclectic pool of knowledge that I grabbed from Club Classic. Organically, the team that I was on disbanded. And then from there, it was like I bounced around a lot. I didn't even know what the tryout process was like because I hadn't really gone through it for 3-4 years. I just stuck with the same club. Like it was just in where I was at in the time that I played, you just stayed with who you were with, right? I didn't really stir up too many problems. I didn't really have any issues with, you know, what was, you know, going on. I enjoyed my football. I liked where I was at. I enjoyed my coaches. I learned new things every single day. And so I stayed. And then when it kind of unfolded and disbanded, I did take a leap and jumped around a bit, different tryout, going through the tryout process. I went up an age group. So I was born 93, but this is back when you didn't go based on birth year. You kind of went on the calendar year. So technically I played 94, but I was a 93. I went up in 93. I went as far up as 92. Those opportunities were excellent for me because I'd already been used to playing up, but it was more of a convenience thing again. Some of those 93, 92 teams were a little bit further out than my parents could, I'll say, afford to get out to every single evening. And then, you know, I bounced around and then I landed at Texans. I really wanted to play at Texans. This was a 94 Red West team coached by Clint Kraft. And I mean, what a wonderful team that was. That was my first experience of like high level youth soccer. I think they were ranked, or from what they tell me, I never checked, but they tell me they were number one in the nation. So that's the one I float with. Number one in the nation as a youth team, played, you know, all the major tournaments, Disney, Surf Cups, Dallas Cup. My first interaction with all of those different, I played Classic Division One. I mean, this is like a kid going from Division Three classically to jumping to like the top of Division One was a huge jump. But again, I felt like I was playing at that level already. So the jump wasn't too overwhelming for me. It was more like, how do I fit in with the group? And so that was the big jump, my first big jump into, I'll say, high level youth soccer from a youth stage. And that's probably at 12 years old, I think. 12 years old is when I take my step into kind of the big, I'll say the big show for youth soccer.
It's crazy. No, I mean, I find youth, the soccer environment here very, how do I phrase it? Chaotic now, because it is, there are so many clubs. I feel like there needs to be more clubs. The more I've done my research on this, no club needs to have 15 teams with the same age group,
right?
Or more than 3 or 4 teams per age group.
To your point, I remember playing, this is a little bit further down the road, but I remember playing, well, I guess no, this was at Club Classic 2 in the 94 age group. We had two teams, one that was based in Plano, like I'll say this side of North Texas, and one that was based in Arlington, right? So, I mean, like he kind of covered both areas of the Metroplex, and that was it. Those are the two teams, you know, that you either play for this one or that one if you wanted to play for this club, or you went somewhere else, and that was it.
And now you have clubs that have 10, 12 teams deep per age group, and some of these age groups that are trying to compete and develop players. And Wilco, I love his philosophy on the squad system he's talked about. You have your development competitive and you have your competitive squad. And I remember when he posted it and we talked about it, it was the Your all-star in your competitive team might not be your all-star in your development competitive team, and they might be the playmaker, or they might be just be a support player, and you just never know the dynamic of that player they have in each squad they're in, and it's based on the people around them. And I find that to be very fascinating.
Absolutely. And sorry to interrupt, but
what's
funny about that is I remember being on that development team, right? I think they were at the time they were deciphered by colors, right? Same as today. I think the orange was like competitive, like this is your top group. And then the white was, which of course were our colors, home and away, were our development players. And I remember being put on the development team. And that was like my first taste of like, man, again, before I had just been training collectively as a group, like in the age group, you're just training with all these kids. And then as I get, you know, again, more competitive, more, I'll say structured, I'm in this 94 group. It's got a competitive team. It's got your development team. And I remember being in the development team thinking like, I want to be in that competitive team. Like it was there was no question. I was like, man, I want to be in that competitive team. And part of me thinks that like, I was pestering Wilco a lot about like, coach, what I need to work on, what I need to do, talking to my parents, hey, what do I need to do? Looking at some of the players and thinking like, what are they doing? What am I doing? What is the bridge and the difference here? But I remember being a part of that developmental team and in that same system that Wilco still provides today and always striving to be on that competitive team, like always wanted to be on the top team. And I'd finally broken in. And I'd always stayed in. After I'd broken in, I'd always stayed in. Because for me, it was like, okay, I'm in. It was like, a now what? But then in my head, I think it was maybe my mom that told me like, okay, if you want to stay there, what are you going to do? Or my father telling me that, or maybe a combination of the two. But I remember wanting so badly to be in that competitive team and finally had broken in and was like, okay. It was almost like, it's almost like the same analogy is like, you know, the process is almost more rewarding than, you know, the actual end of the journey. I remember getting to the end of that journey and being like, okay, where's the next thing? And then the next thing was, okay, how do I stay in the team? What is that like? How do I do that? So just funny little anecdote there, you know, based on his same model, I was a part of that process.
That's amazing. So now when you were, because I think a lot of kids struggle with the mentality of, they call it the 8B squad, orange and white, red. That's like there's red, blue, and white, depending on what club. I mean, right. They have those color code systems. And I think parents are hung up on my kids not on the top squad. So, and they want their kid on the top squad, even if they aren't ready. And I think this is where we as parents with young kids, my kid's 9, 10, will be 10 next month. I have to think about this. He'll be 10 in January. And when we look at it as parents and we don't look at it from the player's perspective, like you have the drive, the motivation to want to be there at 12. I feel it today, it's the flip role. Most kids are just happy playing. Their parents want to be on the top. Now, since you do coach and have some of that mentality, what advice do you advise in that age group then for them to say, take a step back, see where they're at on the pitch, see how they're developing, and watch them grow versus push from a parent perspective? Like, how do you help parents, or what advice would you give parents to say, take the step back sort of mentality?
Right. That one's a case by case. If I'm trying to think of like general knowledge or general advice I'd provide is I always lean into like what does, and sometimes it's hard because kids don't really have the autonomy or they have a hard time with the question as simple as, you know, what do you want? I always lean into what does the kid want? You know, do they really love playing soccer or what are their aspirations? And almost reverse engineer that to see, okay, where do I fit into all of this? And, you know, I'm a parent myself. I've got little ones, 4 and 2. And soccer aside, I find myself thinking like, okay, well, at what point is my information going to be the one that helps guide them? Or at what point do I let them take the lead and say, you know, let them kind of design their life and just be here as a safety net, you know, if I need to be there as a safety net. So it's being on the parent side, just a parent myself. I really lean into like, what are my kids listening to? What are my kids watching? What are my kids observing? How do they feel about the different activities? And I take it with a grain of salt in terms of they have a bad day, you know, school didn't go so well, they're tired, they're hungry, or what have you, and make sure that doesn't necessarily deviate from what they want to do in general. I think if your kid loves to game and your kid wants to get better, I think there's a fine balance between parents encouraging and pushing for some things that you know your kid wants, but again, it's hard, right, as a kid to be like, do I, you know, what does it take to get there? What I want this thing, but I don't really know what it is. So that's when I think parents have a very sound mind to say, okay, let's try these things as your, you know, training modalities or as your steps to in your pathway or in your career and see where that takes us. And then again, you start to learn more as a player yourself and figure out, okay, this was good. I like this. Okay, I want to keep going with it. Or, you know, maybe it's not for me. And why is it not for me? So I think if I were to condense that into a phrase, I'd always figure out what your kid's why is. And really, you know, to a certain extent, and depending on age, depending on where they're at playing wise, listening to what your kid wants. Now, there's a whole bunch of different variables that go along with that. I mean, that could be a whole episode in itself. but I think if your kid's why is to some extent clear as far as what they want for the game and how they want to play the game, as a parent, listen to what that is. Don't invade as far as support. Don't invade the process as far as trying to take it over. Allow your kid to lead that and then support as best as possible. In my experience, I was able to lead that conversation, and I feel the same way today as I did as soon as I picked up soccer. I just have an innate drive. I can't explain it. It's divine intervention. But I see it in kids. And I'll say the other combination of that piece was neither of my parents played soccer. They have to this day. I played soccer, you know, at a high level for 20 odd years. And my father still doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's watched almost every single game, has seen me play in huge championships, has seen me lose big championships, has been there. He knows soccer, but again, probably not any more than any one of these North Texas parents knows. So that's one thing. But my parents are also self-aware to the part where they don't know the game as well. They understand that the coach on the other side is a lot more professional in terms of knowledge and experience. And they respected that. There's a lot of times where maybe I wasn't playing or I didn't get the things that I felt like I wanted to be, like the development team, right? I never had once my parents invade that process and say, coach, my kid should be there. Coach, my kid deserves to be on this team. They respected the process. Whatever the decision made by the coach, it's a decision made by the coach. And then at that point, it was, again, what's your why? Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to get on the competitive team? And then how are you going to do it? Again, I know that's different personalities, different mentalities, different upbringings, different cultures. A lot of that kind of perspective comes from cultural, right? My parents respecting, you know, who's in charge, not wanting to cross over boundaries that they had no business crossing. Again, with respect to the profession. I mean, they were coaches. They didn't know soccer. They didn't understand the game. They didn't really understand the development process. They looked to me as the gauge, you know, where you're at. Okay, you had a bad day. You did this. You did that. What my parents were really great at was supporting, right? And support doesn't necessarily mean, you know, hold your hand. I'm going to walk you through this. Support was like, hey, you had a bad game. Why'd you have a bad game? What coach say to you? You know, okay, why do you think the coach said that to you? And so those are points. A lot of times, again, as a kid growing up, as, you know, getting into these competitive stages, going through 12 to 13, what that jump looks like biologically, getting into 14, 15, 16, what that looks like. But there's a lot of times it's probably, you know, upset with my parents. But, it, you know, being on this side of it now, and being where I'm at today with the game, those are huge key points that, I take away from how that process worked for me and how I think, generally speaking, it can work for others as well. Again, there's got to be a balance. It's not always going to be 50-50. Sometimes it is 75 on the parents and 25 on the kid to just be there and, you know, show up and just like get to the training session, and the parent doing everything they can to get their kid to the training session because they know I could love soccer. Maybe they're in a slump. Why is a slump happening? And then some of that is 75%. Like, kids like, I want to go. Like, I'm in. Come on. Let's go outside. Let's go, you know, to this training session here. Let's go watch this game. So I think the balance is ever changing. I think, you know, it's like stocks. It's, you know, it goes up, it goes down. You know, put your money in and see what you get out of it. Sometimes there's a loss, sometimes there's a gain. But I think ultimately what I always come back to is what is your why? Why do you do it? From the kid's perspective. And then from the parent perspective, listening and observing and really trying to help curate the environment that they need. And it's not always the easiest one. It's not always the easiest environment that shows the best success. Sometimes there is some hardship that needs to be involved. Obviously, observe it with a keen eye. I wouldn't say jump right in when things are not going your way or going your kid's way, or, you know, there's something that goes against the grain. I think to a certain extent that builds a bit of resiliency. It builds a little bit of how do you overcome adversity. Of course, if it's, and we know North Texas soccer, if it becomes a little bit overbearing, then of course, right, there's your flag that maybe you need to change environments, right? That maybe it starts to become a little bit mundane or insane to continue to push this direction when the wall's not budging.
There's so many things there. I'm going to go back to you, because what was your why then? I mean, you had at a very young age, from the sounds of it, 6, 7, I'm not even jump to like the 12, 13, maybe 14 age group. What was your why? Was it just the love of the game, or was it the challenge and love of the game? I feel like there's a difference. I mean, between the two, because it's just like anything else. There's the challenging side of something, but we love doing something. I love woodworking. Is it challenging? Yes. And that's why I continue loving it and doing it. But it becomes... you have to push yourself to go to the next stage of it. With soccer, right, I feel it's like anything else. It's the same idea. It is, you love the game, but what was your why to push yourself even farther? Because to be at the stage that you've been at, the championships, the wins, the losses, the high level playing field, it all comes together at some point. And every player I've talked to, there is a why. What pushed them to go to that next level? And it wasn't apparent, it was something internal. So what was your why then?
Yeah, my why was I wanted to be a pro. I mean, simple as that. I wanted to be a professional. I wanted to be the best. When I look back at it now, I think a lot of that is like egotistical, and I would certainly cater. Like, I would guide that mindset for anyone else who's on that path in a different way than I approached it. I always thought I was the best, but there was not, I would say there's not a lot of humility. Now, being in where I'm at now, I think the kind of confidence that I carry is, as a professional, the confidence that I carry now is understanding like my best and what it takes to be the best and how to be the best. I'll say go from a youth age and chasing after that why to be a pro was, it is, I knew it was going to have to be something different. Like, I wanted to be the best. I knew I was going to have to be the best somehow. I mean, even as psychotic as being like, I'd walk into a store and think like, I wonder if anyone plays soccer in this store. And am I the best soccer player that's in this store, in this area right now? I mean, there's, again, that's like, for me, that's just like ego, right? Because what does it matter that like this mom or this dad over here is walking down and play soccer? Why would I need to be better than them? But that was my mentality it was psychotic, it was chaotic, it was I'll say to an extent like imbalanced, because like I had just this crazy drive to be the best, to want to be the best. And again, I don't know that that's the right perspective to take. I think to be the best and want to be the best is completely healthy. I think the parts that come along with that, which is like some of the mindfulness, is I hope we get to talk about some of that and some of the stuff that I want to do with my futsal trainings. But you know, it was just my why was just to be a pro and like do whatever it takes to be the best and like work as hard as you can, be better than everyone else. I mean, it even hurt probably some relationships, like as a kid, you know, friendships that I had growing up or experiences that I would have had, you know, had I just chosen to, you know, just maybe have a normal childhood. I had a pretty normal childhood, but I just mean like sleepovers or, you know, birthday parties or, you know, just things of that nature, you know, as you're a kid growing up, you know, some of the things that you take on as a kid. I mean, there are so many times that I can remember being like looking at my mom and saying like, I got invited to sleep over, but I knew I had a game the next day at 9 a.m. League game, regular game. There's no pressure on it at all. But I was like, I can't miss this game. There's no way. I don't want to be tired. Okay, I'm going to stay in, mom. My mom telling me like, no, you shouldn't go, is me having a conversation with my mom being like, yeah, not today. I'm just going to sit in, play some video games, go to bed. I'll be ready to go tomorrow morning. You know, and turn down right that chance. And that's happened so many times. So yeah, my why was to be a pro. I wanted to be the best. I pushed myself to be the best, or to the best of my abilities, and what that meant and what I knew then. I just wanted to be, you know, at the highest level.
Now your why, so as you progress, so let's move to like 16-17, because you did play at a collegiate level. So how did you focus your attention? Because from the sounds of it, your parents supported you, your move, no matter where you went, from the sounds of it, as best that they could, and to foster that love for the game and foster that growth to let you live your dream. How did you meet the path? I mean, you said it grew organically for you. Now, 16, 17, this is when you're starting to go to showcases now. I don't know how it was then. I mean, and now you move on to the next level, where I think it's the more crucial years beyond what I call the golden age. It's the technical years, and you have to find the right club, the right coach to grow you technically. As a team player, how did you find your path moving that direction to be in the right spots at the right moments? Because it's about luck and being viewed at the right moment, to move on to the next stage. Because I feel like there's that gap that we go through in club youth, and then you go play collegiately. Like, how did you foster your pathway towards that direction then? Is that where you want the route you wanted to go, or did you want to skip it altogether and go play pro?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I started to get closer to, like, you get into high school, like, I think it starts to become a little bit more tangible. Your mind becomes a little bit more sound. And I'll say, as a kid, you have to dream. Like, you have to. Like, you have to have something that's like over the moon, in my opinion. Like, you have to, like, even if it's to say I want to be the best player in the world, like, I think you have to have that dream, and you have to believe in it wholeheartedly, regardless of how like minuscule those chances could potentially be. If you truly believe in it and you really, really dream it, I think that something unfolds from that. It may not be exactly what you want it to be. Like, you may not be I won't stir up any conversation on who the best is, right? But whoever the best is to you, whoever you idolize, and that's just like the top of soccer for you. Even if you don't end up being that person, male, female, I think you have to have it. Like, I think it's necessary. So as it starts to continue to, you know, ebb and flow, and what this really looks like and how it continues to shape and mold, again, pieces of that pathway, I think, are going to start to show up. Again, if you stayed focused and dreamed, and you dreamed hard, and you've talked about it, and you've done it, and you put in the work, I think it starts to unfold. And for me, getting into high school, collegiate was the pathway. It started to, like, I played at this time now, I'm playing for Solar. I'm playing for Kevin Smith. And Kevin Smith was integral in the way he approached the game. Because at this point, I'm just playing the game. You know, I think, and the kids around me are all doing the same. I mean, it's like a unified focus of, like, all of us want to play at the next level. All of us want to do this. I mean, there's not There's maybe one or two that don't, which again is totally fine. Those were the one or two that always changed every year. But the core group of guys that I played with from 13 all the way up till 18 when I graduated high school has been the same 10 or 12 guys. And I don't think it's by chance to be in that environment that like it doesn't happen. So all this time as well, I'm still playing with Armando Palacios because he's that voice in my head that's saying, you know, you can do these things. He's giving me a taste of professional soccer as well. He's telling me, he's showing me players that he's pushed to that level and what that pathway looks like. So for me, the bridge was like, okay, I'm playing with Kevin Smith. There's an absolute bridge here to go play collegiate, and that could be the next step in the pathway. I'm talking with Armando Palacios, which is providing me the vision of what it could look like to be a pro, how you can get there, and that there is a direct pathway from where you're at now to being there. So between the two of those were my inspiration. It was, is there an actual opportunity to go play professional and skip college altogether? I think it crossed my mind. And I think, again, the dreamer part of me was like, man, that'd be great. I think the cultural part of me, it becomes a little bit more, okay, well, this would mean something huge for my family if I get to do play at a collegiate level and go to college. But both my parents were just hardworking people. My father has associates. I don't think my mother went to college, even for like a brief stint. So a lot of their, you know, again, they started out early with me, and that was the world I knew. So to be put into a situation where, again, to come from a diverse background, come from a different culture, to be put into a world where you really have to fight and grind for what it is that you want and really dream and believe, it was a huge piece of like my want to go play college soccer and be that for my family. I remember this conversation at like, when I started playing soccer at like 7. There's not a lot that I remember from maybe 7 other than like soccer memories. And I remember my father telling me about SMU, and this is probably around 2002. Right? Looking at the history now that I'm a part of at SMU, I can understand like this is, you know, they're going to the Final Four. You know, they've got a Herman Trophy winner on their team, and this is that time frame. And I remember my dad being like, man, you should, I guess it made a lot of noise at the time. Of course, I was 7, so I didn't know any better. But my father obviously paid attention to it and said, you know, man, you can play for SMU. They've got like a really good soccer team. At 7, you're like, I don't even know what college was. You know, it wasn't something that was in my mind. You know, fast forward, you get, you know, 7 years later, I'm at 14, getting into high school, thinking like, oh, okay, I know who they are. Right? This could be something that actually happens. And so that process for me getting into high school was like, okay, this is the next step in the pathway. Does it deviate me from the path? No, it doesn't, right? So for me, there's a huge piece of that was like, okay, my father had said this. I remember this. You know, I would love to go play here if there's a chance that I get to go play here. And to go even a step further, I remember to get a little bit more like personal and intimate on like how this continues to translate and how this continues to push for me. And I think this is a huge proponent of why this happens. I remember being on the phone with my mom, and I just had a call with the coach at the time. It was Tim McClemens. And I remember thinking, I'd have to call. Tim McClemens says, you know, hey, why don't you come to SMU? I verbally commit. I can't even remember the day. And I remember that happening. But probably happened like as I get into my senior year. 3 months before that, I remember having my first interactions with SMU. But 3 months before that, I lose my mom at 17. And fast forward, like I'm going through all of this process. So when you talk about the process, this is very much a part of my process and the pathway and the guidance. I owe a lot to Kevin Smith and that Solar team, because there were some major players in that team that helped guide this conversation for me, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know, other than trying to get to college, I didn't know anything about applications. I didn't know anything about SAT score. I didn't know anything about GPS. I just knew as best as I could be a good student and like do the, like whatever it is to you, the right thing is, just do the right thing. You know, fortunately, all of that kind of simple mentality put me in a position to be in conversation with SMU along with the way I played. So that pathway for me was, when it all came to fruition, it was a done deal. It was like there was no other like decision or choice in my head than to do this thing, focus the next 4 years in college soccer, and then to become a professional after that. I never deviated from being a professional, wanting that dream. But I knew that like college was going to be the next step, and what that meant for me collegiately, and what that meant for me as a player, as a person, what it meant for my family and how that looked, what I felt like I owed to my family, was like a huge piece of my process. And those who really, really, truly know me, like know that piece of, I mean, that Solar team was there at the funeral, right, for my mother. I mean, like, we had training that day, and I had even decided, like I was even bummed about missing training that day. And I'm thinking, talking to my dad, like, I want to go to training, but there's just no way, like, I can't. That team on that training day come to the funeral. They skip out on training. Everyone's in their gear. They come to the they come to the service, and that a lot of those guys now on that team are like my very best friends, like to this day, like my very best friends that are I talk to. We talk soccer. We talk about the good times. We talk about all of that. I mean, this is just soccer. Then became more than a game. It became like this community, this just ecosystem of, man, there's bad that happens, no doubt. And my path is no different than anyone else. I don't have any different or worse hardships than anyone else. But soccer plays such a huge role in how it's shaped me as a person, how it has taught me to be with other people, how to treat people, how to just be with your teammates and what it means to be a team and all of that. And like all of those different components and pieces, like it's the melting pot of what pushes me to go play college soccer, want to go play college soccer at SMU and continue my soccer career that way, and still with sights to be a professional soccer player. So that's the process, that's the pathway, that's all of everything between 14 to 18 is like my pathway to go all the way through to get, you know, to college soccer, to play college soccer, to push me to play college soccer, to get then into college soccer at a Division I level. That's my pathway. It's a little bit different and a little bit, I'll say a little bit more tragic than others, but I think what I can take away from that is there's got to be some piece that trampolines that for you. Like, if you still dream and love to do it and want to do it, like, what is that next piece that's going to help you get there? I don't suggest that it's tragedy, but I do think there is something that, like, what is it that you really, like, at some point, there's got to be something more than just training and working and pushing hard. There's got to be something else inside of you that pushes you to do that X thing. What is that X factor? And for me, it was kind of this seed that was planted in me at 7, it manifesting 7 years later to having this one event that catalyzes, you know, my process to get, you know, to this next stage and next level of my career.
Now, as you move to your college career, SMU has had one of the best boys programs in the country over, I don't know how many decades now. Do you feel your time there really helped you prep for the next stage of playing? Because you went indoor soccer, I call it the hockey. It's like hockey. It's fast paced. It's quick.
Absolutely.
It's milliseconds of thinking where I feel like on the soccer field, on a pitch, you actually have more time to digest, to recognize what's going on and to move forward. Where on the soccer, the indoor arena, it's so much faster, so much smaller. You have to make those split seconds decisions faster than even with futsal. The more I have spent time listening to stories of players talking about futsal, they say it's even faster than indoor because everything's so much quicker. Everything's even faster on the fly and everything stays on the ground, where arena and I feel like the ball does come off the ball ground a little bit more than Futsole because you don't have the walls to keep the ball in. Right. How do you feel like college prepped you for the next stage of your professional career? Because where did you go after college? Did you get drafted? Did you go overseas? Did you stay local to play?
Yeah. So I'll say, like, from my game caters towards, like, again, being skillful, being creative, being a dribbler, being in tight spaces, being enclosed, being under pressure, and then being able to get out of them. Or again, on a run, being able to get through as many defenders as possible, or just kind of access space that way. My game has always catered towards that. So I'll say, like, even at SMU, I think SMU was a huge, absolutely a piece of that, because it taught me, like, pieces of the game from, like, a high tactical standpoint that I would have, that were necessary and crucial for me, and then situations as well to test and push, like, where I was as a player, right? I mean, there's, you know, in college soccer, you play against people who are going to be pros. You just don't know which ones yet, right? You're going to be playing against pros, so it's every single game. How do you match up against these guys? And, you know, I think I was brought into SMU because of my I think the way that I view the game as far as from a tactical standpoint, I think there's a lot of athleticism that was combined in that. And then I think the bulk of it is kind of my technical ability and my grasp on certain situations from a technical standpoint. And so to make the bridge and make the connection here, my game has always from 7 all the way up till now has always catered to tight spaces, being under pressure, keeping the ball close, having that, let's say, technical superiority to handle and work in those situations, regardless of how unreasonable they may be, or maybe how up against the wall, you know, I may be, no pun intended. But my game's always catered to that. I played small-sided growing up, small-sided games. I'll say my earliest introduction to futsal was actually at Tips. We would play, I'll say, a bit more organized. I was never taught some of the futsal movements and futsal techniques, tactics, and ideas that I teach today. But I mean, different playing surfaces, different just like playing that kind of game and how to set that up and in a small-sided game and how to translate that to a bigger game. I mean, that's a part of my upbringing as well. And obviously in my later career, as I get into college, you know, we played a lot of, you know, I'll say futsal. We play a lot of small side and we play a lot of, you know, games like that. You know, there's a lot of my, I'll say college career that's, you know, with the group of guys that I graduated with and the team that I played on, you know, all 4 years. I mean, those guys love soccer. I mean, like, there's guys, obviously, that you know, there's different, I'll say, inspirations or different focuses or attractions, whether it be academic, whether it be social, whether it be from a work standpoint or what have you. But I'll say the core group of guys that I was around, they loved it. I mean, they loved the game. I mean, they helped me love the game a lot. So aside from, like, the team itself, there's a core group of guys that, like, helped me continue to love the game and love the grind and love the work. I mean, like, you're talking workouts before workouts, workouts after you're done with your school day, workouts after you're done with work. I mean, like, at all hours of the day, it's just, it's open. Like, let's go play. Let's go work out. Let's go do something. And those are huge pieces of like, how I view it in terms of how to get to the next level, because the next stage would be at your best in the stage that you're at. And there's a lot of that stuff that people don't see, or he's like, no one's going to tell you. Like, there's never once, you know, a time where, you know, the coach now, Kevin Hudson, told me or any of the guys that we need to get some extra work in, right? His job was to put players on the field. If you wanted to be on the field, well, how are you going to do it? You know, sometimes the 2-hour training session we did during the day wasn't enough, right? It wasn't. It was just flat out. You know, you needed to be stronger. You needed to be faster. You needed to do more film. You needed to focus on your technique. You needed to concentrate on situations. I mean, there's just so many different aspects of the game that, like, if you really start to specialize and get specific, there's just not enough time in a two-hour training session, depending on what position you play, focusing on that, right? So you know, that process absolutely helped me become the player that I am today. A lot of my upbringing also caters towards that, again, that what I, I'll say my playing style shines on, which is small-sided, dribble, pace, change of direction, being creative, having flair, in addition to, you know, some sort of combination. I actually didn't start getting, like, better at passing until I got to college. So where I'm at today, I say better at passing, but even just, like, the weight of the pass, how you pass the ball. Is it spinning? Is it bobbly? Is it rolling? Is it, where's the path of the pass? How is it being given to your teammate? So a lot of those things, which I hadn't necessarily focused on all the time, were like, those are things that I really honed in on in college that helped me a lot. And so that was absolutely a piece of like my career. And then after my career, I get paperwork to fill out for the MLS draft. I start to go through that process, knowing that it's going to be like a supplemental draft, that there's a potential, right, that I get picked to go to MLS. Fill out all the paperwork, send it in. This happens with, like, when you're a senior. You go through that process, don't get picked up. You know, try to connect with any soccer guys that I can connect with in the area to see if I can get into a preseason with a Division II team or with a division, you know, maybe an MLS team. You know, obviously FC Dallas is like a, you know, being at that level, you never know what the network is like, you know, who you ask and who has, you know, some pull in that. But unfortunately, don't get pulled in. I play. There was some Division II teams that I got connected with, but again, for me to go that route, Division II, it's not that I didn't think I was too good for it. I just, that part of my game, I didn't have the drive for, and that was more of like that was just like a me thing. I don't know if that was like, man, I really had high hopes to do this one thing, and it didn't end up happening. But I just remember being like really devastated because I felt like, man, I was playing great football. I was in a good spot individually as a player. At this point, I think this is where like mentality is like a difference maker. I think to an extent, my mentality is elite, but I know that there was like personal items that were happening that deviate. Like, again, to be a professional, I think from a mentality standpoint, there's a lot of sacrifice. You have to be zoned in and zeroed in like at all parts of the day. And there was like things happening that I just wasn't focused in on. Like, I wasn't 100% focused in on. I was maybe 85% focused, but even that 85% focus is not enough, because there's guys that are on 110%, right? And you're 85. That's a big gap. So I kind of step out of soccer a little bit. I played a little bit of semi-professional local, just because I love to play. That was more of like the pressure's off. You love to play. Can you play at a competitive level, or what is competitive for you, and still play? So I played some semi-professional ball here. Really, really enjoyed it. Loved it. A lot of that was with Armando Feliz again. And then I start to lean into coaching career. I was coaching in college already. I was going to City Futsal from time to time. And I link up, after I graduate, I link up with the guys at City Futsal, SMU alum as well. And I start to get into futsal, like organized futsal coaching. So I get to that, and that changed my coaching career I owe a lot to those guys too. And this is like a part of my upbringing and education that is, I learned so much about futsal, and I'll say my game is tenfold better than it was when I was playing. It's probably better at this point today as far as what I know about the game, how I navigate the game, how I play the game, and I owe it a lot to coaching futsal. And that was, gosh, that was 10 years ago. But yeah, I started coaching futsal. I hear word about indoor soccer, piques my interest. I get involved. I have my first, you know, my rookie year with the now the Texas Outlaws, but at the time formerly known as the Mesquite Outlaws. I have my rookie year for most of the soccer community. You know, Tattoo is my coach. Nick Stavro is the coach. Sagu is the coach. So for, again, I'll say for the maybe the older generation of North Texas soccer community, those names and bells for, I mean, they go on forever. I have my rookie year with them. And I'm to this day still with the team of the Texas Outlaws. Now the Texas Outlaws after a name change. So that's my playing career there. I'll say everything up to this point has absolutely helped get to this point here. And I'll say today, I feel absolutely motivated to play not only indoor soccer, but just like soccer in general. I feel as motivated and as focused today as I did when I was first going into college, and that hadn't happened in a while. I think part of that is because I want to have a good season here with the Outlaws. And I think another piece of that is because I'm also a member of the U.S. National Team for Futsal, and we're on the brink of deciding who's going to go to CONCACAF here in the late spring. I haven't had my debut yet, but you know, I'm really gunning for it, and I'm going to give everything that I have to try and get that chance. Again, that's an opportunity for me. I also had a dream of playing for the national team. I didn't think it was going to be in this capacity, but you know, kind of you fast forward now, you know, things happen the way they happen, and you know, the opportunity presents itself, and it presented itself in this kind of fashion, and I couldn't be happier with it to be even considered or a part of the pool or having the conversations that I have. Knowing the people that I know and playing with the people that are on the team, that is a great accomplishment for me. Again, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm on the developmental squad again, and I want to be on the competitive team. What am I going to do to get there? So that's, you know, where I'm at currently with my playing career. I'm sure that'll be, you know, the extent of my playing career. We'll see what happens after this year. I'm really focused on doubling down on the youth and seeing what I can provide there as far as the rest of my career goes.
That's amazing. I mean, that's quite, I mean, it's really cool listening to the path that you took and the route you took to be where you're at today. I mean, to play at a high level still at 29 is absolutely amazing. And I mean, you play in one of the newer arena soccer leagues in the country, and to have the coaches that you have, Segu and Tattoo, are absolutely two remarkable men. I mean,
hey everyone, as we conclude this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch and getting ready for next week's episode with Part 2 with Brendan Lee, I think if you sit down and re-listen to this episode, I think you get several different messages out of it. I sure did, and I've probably listened to it maybe a dozen times now. I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode and really learned something from Brendan.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community, so I hope you guys have enjoyed all this, and until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.